Hey folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Coronavirus. Typically it's Talk to Me in the Car, and every Monday I'm doing a new podcast, but during this time of our distance learning and our global pandemic, it's helpful to have an instructional coach on demand. So here I am, rock you like a hurricane, and my goal is to make myself available for daily podcast episodes to provide tips and resources, things you can do as an educator to help get yourself unstuck. And I think it's really helpful because for many of us, certainly for all of us, this is the first time on this scale anything has ever happened that has pushed our classes to distance learning modules if we're doing any classes at all. And on top of that, many teachers have never had the opportunity to take for themselves classes online. So I wanted to walk through best practices every day if I can. Some quick housekeeping notes. New episodes are typically every Monday, but if you like what you're hearing, feel free to like or subscribe, leave a comment. It helps other people find the podcast, and share it on your favorite mediums, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you're using stuff. Helps people find it, which is awesome. If you want to continue the conversation offline, tap me on Twitter. I'm at MeehanEDU. It's Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching, because I really want to help people get fired up about teaching and get things that are good strategies, whether you're in your classroom or just in the education thinking space. Our goal is to help us get unstuck together. So there's a lot of things that are happening, and we really are building the plane as we fly it here. I tell anybody who's in the coaching space that in the next 5 weeks, we're going to probably get about 5 years worth of institutional knowledge about what we need to work on for professional development, where all the holes in the fence are, whether it's things about compliance issues or tech issues, whether it's things about training issues or just student engagement issues. You can't ask a fourth grader to teach himself, complex division. It's just not going to happen. No matter how kind you are and how reasonable you are with your deadlines, there's just certain things that just can't work, and that's important. So again, if we want to have conversations further, MeehanEDU, let's do it on Twitter. Likewise, I have a website where I share a bunch of my resources, as many as I can, as free as I can, and it's adrenalinerush.com. That's adrenaline with an E, like educational adrenaline, because I'm fired up to teach and I want to help people who are fired up to spread the word and spread the love. And I have a book, it's called Adrenaline Rush, which in another time and place is a thing we can talk about if you're interested in the book, but it does have a bunch of strategies. That can be helpful for your classroom. It's inspired by game-changing student engagement with the spirit of theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms to get us moving there. But I don't really want to sell books, nor do I want to sell products. I want to talk about how to get classes moving and active and doing good things from home, whether they're littles, middles, high school, or even college learners, because this is a big thing, and it is a once-in-a-lifetime event, but it does set the precedent for larger conversations about online learning and what we as educators need to be responsible for and think about in the time ahead. So I'll share some resources every day on the podcast, and today I want to talk about the do's and don'ts of Online Teaching 101. If you've never done it before, I got you. Don't worry about it, because I've been in online classes myself, and some of them have really sucked straight up. There are others that have been better. Some have marginally sucked, and if you've done the online class thing yourself, unfortunately, we can't expect that everyone has access to the internet all at the same time. It doesn't work like a teleconference. Whether it's because students are home and they're sharing an internet device with family members, or there are two or three members of the family who need the internet all at once, or there is no reliable internet at home, or students have other schedules at home, whether they have to take care of brothers and sisters, or they have to cook, or they have to make runs to different doctor's offices or grocery stores, or they're not in control of their own schedule. Maybe mom or dad are in and out of the house and they are expected to do chores or something like that. We have to be flexible. So I want to offer the do's and don'ts that I've collected, and I've found these in a bunch of different places, so I apologize for not attributing the original source of this, because I think it is sort of a mass product of what I found on the internet just over time about best practices for online learning. So here's some do's and don'ts, and we'll talk about each one, the do and then the don't. It kind of goes with it. The first I would say is do use, and we talked about it in yesterday's podcast, a dedicated discussion forum. A discussion forum is great because if there's one person who has a question, there's usually two or three people who could benefit from hearing the answer clarified. A discussion forum is an awesome way on a learning management software like an LMS, like Google Classroom, or iModules, Edmodo, or Final Sight. Those are examples, Blackboard, to just make sure that everybody's hearing the same thing, much like a Facebook discussion, so that if person A has the ask, person B can clarify. And that's good, too, because it can alleviate a ton of work for you as a teacher, so you don't have to respond individually. So if that's the do, then don't rely on individual emails. Individual emails should be reserved for individual problems or individual clarifications or private matters. because what happens is you will get bogged down by cutting and pasting the same message to 3, 4, 5, 10 students. And if you, for any reason, are to be compromised, immunocompromised, or just time-wise you're not available to get it, then that idea or that question, that answer is going to sit in your inbox for a really long time. And if students have a public forum where they know to look to, they'll become conditioned to use it more. Facebook works because people use it. The more people who use that website, the more likely it is to get more traction. That's why MySpace isn't working, right? Because even though it is still, in theory, a site, nobody's hanging out there anymore. If you're hanging your, hey kids, let's get together for a sock hop at the roller rink, and you're wondering why people aren't showing up, well, kids don't hang out at roller rinks anymore, right? And there was a time and place where that was a thing. It's not a thing. So we have to kind of fish where the fish are. And I can't stress it enough. You'll make so much more work for yourself if you're replying on individual emails. I think that online forums, discussion forums are great. So yeah, that's my do and don't for that. Second one, asynchronous learning is a do. Synchronous learning is a don't. Synchronous learning depends on everyone showing up at the same place, same time. Like back when we used to all watch TV shows at the same command performance. There's a reason why only live sports do that anymore. Everything else has been time shifted through streaming and through like binge watching. It's because people have busy lives, busy schedules, and it's really hard to get everybody and their brother to tune in at the exact same time for the exact same thing. So I encourage teachers to, wherever possible, use asynchronous learning, which is you post the video online to your portal or to your website, and then teachers have the content up there. So students move at his or her own pace or their own pace to access that content as they can. This means that simply saying, well, do 20 minutes of work a day per class and we'll all do it at 9:20 a.m. If a kid tries to dial into the internet and in good faith, just for whatever reason, the tech isn't working, they have to restart the computer, that's not going to work. So asynchronous is better than synchronized learning, and figuring out ways that students can move at their own pace, which is ultimately what good classroom practice does too, is not moving every student from a fixed point A to a fixed point B in a fixed calendar date, but rather from each individual student's point A to each individual student's point B, and then checking in regularly as you go. Do and don't number three. Less is more. You gotta go slow to go fast. Assignments can take twice as long when you do them at home. If you have a dog that needs feeding, or a cat that threw up, or a brother and sister who needs a sandwich made for them, or a phone call that comes from your best friend, even if your children in the classroom or in your own home are super focused, there's bound to be a ton of distractions. The phone can ring, right? An email can come, someone can knock on the door. Whatever it is, it can take a lot longer. So consider for yourselves that less is more. Assignments can take a lot more time at home. So you can reasonably expect that even your best students will only be able to put in a certain amount of time before they kind of tap out and cap out. So if that's our do, number three. Our don't is don't do that thing where you become unrealistic. Don't double up on assignments. Well, they missed class, so they have X amount of classwork plus X amount of homework. It ain't gonna work. And it's gonna create a ripple effect across all of the teachers in your building, where if they're overwhelmed in period two work, guess what? They're gonna not do work in period two, and they're gonna give up doing work in pretty much every class period two. You'll end up hoarding the resources that is the student's energy and time, and that's not good for your colleagues. Be a good colleague, be a good teacher. Do not do that unrealistic thing where you say, well, because they missed class, it's 40 minutes of class they missed, plus the at-home homework, plus individual reading. Don't do it, it won't work, and it'll make students fall behind. Number five, giving explicit instructions. Wherever possible, you really want to break things up into small pieces, stepwise checkpoints, with clear expectations of about how much time you expect them to devote to each task. Hey gang, our goal is to build a website. It should take you about 5 minutes to just push the button to make the site go live. When you're done, click this link to submit your website address. Then it should take you X number of minutes to put this page together with this number of video resources. If it takes you 15 minutes to find a good video, that's fine, but like the page should not take any more than 10 minutes to put together, and so on and so forth. Explicit instructions are really, really helpful for students, not just at home, but at all times. So of course the don't, being unclear or vague. Careful not to give too many paragraphs of information. That wall of text will be the thing that breaks a student's heart and breaks students back on the internet. Simply focus on bullet points. Even if you can, like icons, deliverables, checkpoints, it's so much easier on the internet because your brain is not meant to stare at a computer screen for long amounts of time. And unfortunately, if students are staring at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 classes in a row, those walls of text just start to blend and bleed together, and you become like face blind to what the key points are. So we want to honor that for our students too. Next do and don't, if we just did those top four, number five is specifying your expectations. give task requirements and the length amount clearly. Example, submit a 2-minute video recording that uses at least 3 examples of this technique, or submit 3 paragraphs using text evidence from chapter 4. Super clear, super direct, very specific in your instructions. That's awesome for do number, I guess that's number 5. But don't number 5 is be too open-ended. Asking students to just quote, write an essay about The Great Gatsby, or quote, make a video about the earth, will be really confusing. And even the students who want to please, and many students do want to please, will have a hard time knowing how to please. And so they'll freak themselves out by those open-endedness. Wherever possible, give specific dates, times, deadlines. Deadlines not only spur actions, but they really help students understand just what the heck is being asked of them and when it's being asked of them too. Number 6, our do and don't. You have to be empathetic. We have to understand that students have work and school, but they're also dealing with things well outside of it. Got to give them time to connect to family, connect to friends, connect to the world around them, their interests. If they're doing 5 hours of staring at a computer screen for school and then 5 hours of homework a night, 10 hours a day when they're only awake for 12 hours of just hard work and dedicated work will be the thing that crushes their spirit. And if you can't do the Maslow, you can't do the Blooms. So making sure our students are safe and supported. Consider even for yourself one day where you check in on students and just make some phone calls. Hey, set up one day a week. I'm going to just call kids all day and just see how they are. That could be really, really helpful. And I guess the opposite of being empathetic is being apathetic or just pathetic. But that's being overly task-oriented, right? Not assigning too much work. I know that precious, precious AP deadline is coming, or that state standardized test is coming, but I cannot imagine in this day and age that people will not be making moves, making reschedules, or making cancellations outright. Being so task-oriented that all students are doing is homework, unfortunately, they were built to do more than just do paying taxes and dying, and we have to help them wherever we can. Don't be so task-oriented. Next one's up. Communicating consistently, picking a spot, picking a lane, and posting your stuff there regularly. Helpful. The big picture, wherever you're posting it, so that they know where that to go. And then the granular level, so they know where to go there too. Consistency, consistency, consistency. Don't mix your communication channels where you have 5, 10, 20 different things where they're getting emails and text messages, but all with different information. You're certainly welcome to double up, but do not put things in 3 and 4 and 5 and 10 different places that they have to kind of Easter egg hunt their way back into it. It's not going to work. Be online for office hours. That's a great do. Set a time where you say, hey gang, I'll be online checking the forums or checking discussions. That's great. Helpful. The discussion forums are a really great way to expedite that process for teachers. Do not put yourself on standby for all hours at all times. It's admirable to want to give timely feedback to all people, but believe it or not, if you try to put yourself online for all people, you're going to be exhausted and tap out for yourself sooner than you know it. Considering feedback, student feedback, do give student feedback, get student feedback. Use a thing like a Google Forms, collect that information from students. Hey guys, how's this working for you? Do you need help? How's your home life going? Could there's more that I can help you out with there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Seeking student feedback is so critically important. It makes us a better teacher because we know what we're serving based on how they're receiving it. There's a difference between, well, I said it and they learned it, and seeking their feedback can really help us out with that. So don't use the same old approach. Putting up a PowerPoint slide with 40 different slides and saying, hey guys, teach yourself trigonometry, ain't gonna work. There's a reason why you're getting paid to be a teacher, and teaching is hard enough for people who have degrees in it. Can't imagine a child teaching him or herself with no context their way through trigonometry, with no one to correct their mistakes. Practice makes it perfect, but only if you're practicing perfectly. And if a child is making that same mistake on slide number 2, they're probably gonna make that same mistake on slide number 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. Likewise, you don't wanna have to record 40-minute lectures and upload them to YouTube every day. You think your kids want to listen to them? Even if I give you a 10-minute lecture, the likelihood is a no. So consider that for yourself. Talking about tech tools for do's and don'ts, definitely use some tech tools to boost online learning. There are a bunch of great ones out there. If you've used things like Edpuzzle or Flipgrid or Quizzes or Kahoot, Google Forms, they're awesome. They're easy. Most of them are free. Really easy to have implemented to any course or content area. But this is not the time, and this probably should go without saying, to try new and unused tools. If your students have never made their own podcasts, for example, they're going to feel overwhelmed by how to do that. And if you do not walk them through step by step by step by step, if you're going to use a new tool, okay, maybe it's great on the internet, but proceed with caution. You're going to need to allow your students extra time, and you're going to have to make yourself available for on-the-spot support as students get stuck with simple things just like where to register for the software, how to download it, how to use it, how to update, and so on and so forth. Likewise, there are a lot of freemium models out there where even in our best efforts to keep things no cost for students, they might accidentally click the paid model, and just like that, they're charging $200, $300, $500, $800 on parent credit cards for modified versions of what we're offering. That's not good. Talking about one last do and don't, identifying lesson objectives, focus on your transfer skills. After this unit, students should be able to read, write, present, speak, understand timelines, whatever it is. Focusing on that essential question, those transfer skills, do not get too hung up in your content. Well, they have to understand The Great Gatsby because it's The Great Gatsby. Doesn't matter. Sorry. There's plenty of educated people listening to this podcast who have not ever read The Great Gatsby, and you know what? They're decent human beings. But I bet they can read for main ideas. I bet they can read metaphors. I bet they can understand non-literal conversation and things like foreshadowing and things like character studies, whether they've read Gatsby or not. It's just but one lens to do it. So don't give random assignments. Don't do that thing where you're like, well, I want to keep your brain busy. So here's a brain break. Here's a Sudoku. Here's a word search. Those things are fun. They have nothing to do with your course content. You cannot do a Sudoku and call it math. Sorry, it just doesn't work that way. A word search where I have to look for words spelled upside down and backwards does not help me learn chemistry terms. All it does is forces me to search for words, and that's not, if I looked at it, what a chemistry class was supposed to be for. If the class was called searching for words, well, that's one thing. But when I'm looking for words upside down and backwards, I'm not even learning how to spell them correctly, and that's just sort of doofy. So don't do it. Don't just give busy work for busy work's sake. If you don't have an assignment to do, let your kids have the day off. Let them have some time. Let them reflect. Let them spend some time with their families. Be human. Recognize that this is all a work in progress. We're doing the best that we can, but there's a lot to learn, and there's a lot of ways that learning looks that's messy. Consider real-world applications of things that could be outside of your content area. Talk about the coronavirus. Have them watch the news. Have them go outside. Have them, you know, talk about what life is like in their world right now, or read an article about, hey, here's an idea. Even a quick, you know, I posted this up in the discussion forum. Would love to hear your thoughts about it. It's related to our content area because it's written in Spanish as a hypothetical, and how Spain is dealing with the crisis. Something like that is a very easy one-off assignment that can still generate meaningful conversation. Following these do's and don'ts won't guarantee success, but will hopefully put you in a place where you're in a better spot. And I hope you find this to be helpful too. These podcasts are designed to break down these pieces and parts, and so that we as educators are ultimately better versions of ourselves every day. Thanks for tuning in. New episode tomorrow. We'll do every weekday through the duration of this lockdown, this freeze type. And it's a hard time. So if you want to talk further, please message me. Thank you for the support. And for those who reached out already, I truly do appreciate it. And my goal is to be here as long as we need to be here. Because in a time where we have uncharted waters, it pays to have somebody who's, you know, at least sailed the boat once or twice. And that's what I'm here to do as an instructional coach. So thanks again. Be well, and let's hang out tomorrow. Thanks.